Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Hey guys, welcome back to Hacks and Hobbies. In part one, or the previous episode, Maria Bryan helped us understand how to honor the dignity of the stories we share. Now we're going deeper. How can nonprofits, marketers, and mission-driven teams embed trauma-informed practices into the heart of what they do? Welcome back, Maria.
Thank you. So happy to be back.
Now, Maria, again, Maria is here to help us move from well-meaning to well-practiced in how we tell and use stories. So, Maria, a lot of organizations care deeply, but they don't know where to start, right? They've created these organizations to help, but they don't know where to start. What does it take to create a truly trauma-informed storytelling culture?
I love this question. And I alluded to it a little bit in the previous episode, and that is, we can't do this in a silo. So first of all, I encourage you to get trained. I would love for you to come through the Wind Bearing Witness program, but there are other just general trauma-informed trainings out there that are very low cost. So do your due diligence in having an understanding on how trauma impacts everyone involved in the storytelling process. That just means everyone. So you're being impacted by trauma as someone who's holding space for difficult stories. Your audiences are being impacted by trauma by revisiting their own traumas. And then our audiences are impacted by trauma that you might be telling and sharing. So it starts with that awareness. It starts with that education of understanding. And when that happens, when that light bulb happens that, oh, we need to do this differently, we need to mitigate harm. We need to take a few steps back. From there, I think there's this pause that you can do and audit your organization, audit your storytelling process. We've all developed it or learned it, so we might have to do a little bit of unlearning. Probably gonna have to beef up your story readiness part of your process and your review process. So just stop by looking at what your workflow is from the moment you realize you need a story. So let's say you have a launch coming up, so you know you need to gather some testimonials in the fundraising space. Usually at the end of the year or the spring, we have fundraising events. So there's going to be some kind of event where you need a story. That's where it begins. So from that moment until the story is out in the wild, what are all the steps that take place? Once you have that, that's when you are seeing where you can insert as much safety and agency throughout the process. And that's going to take time. So then you're also going to buffer more time. When I used to interview folks, again, when I worked in-house, I'd always kind of give this 20-minute time limit on interviews. And now I know, and asking people to always tell difficult stories. It wasn't sometimes, it was always. Yeah. And now knowing that that should have probably been a 40-minute to an hour time frame to allow for deep breaths, to allow for maybe just a break to drink some water or whatever that may be. So from there, once you revisit your policies and procedures, I would love to see these change agents, whether they feel like they're leaders or not, they are, to have internal trainings. So, you know, to go in and say, hey, this is why I think this is important and this is how we can do it. A lot of communications and marketing folks have likely done these trainings in different contexts. I know that I did a big rebrand for a very large organization. I worked inside that organization and I organized a few things. I organized a big launch party to celebrate. And I also organized trainings with every single team in the organization. And if you are in communications or in marketing, you might have done something like this. Whenever you're kind of changing directions or rebrand, you likely are training folks. So I think we can do this within being trauma-informed. I also think of, you know, for me, when I first started my career, it was social media. That was what was new. Now it's probably AI, right? Where we're like, oh shoot, like what are our guidelines on AI? Are we going to use this? Are we not going to use this? Everybody is using it, but sometimes we're just turning, just like pretending that we're not using it. And so I think we're going to get to a point where folks are like, okay, let's just not pretend that our staff are not using AI and just have a training on it and how we're going to be using it correctly and ethically. So
Absolutely.
anyway, the same goes for trauma-informed storytelling practices. Let's just reckon with the fact that this is might be causing harm, how we tell stories, and have these internal trainings, which are probably a lot easier now than when I was doing in-house trainings,
Oh,
literally on
yeah.
the subway, going from borough to borough, with my little backpack. So yeah, I think that's one of the last things we can do in an organization is once you have that awareness, to share that awareness and excitement. Trauma is not
Yeah,
fun, but I think that
no.
there is a way that we can talk about this in a way, in a celebratory way, and how this is going to just help us in our mission. Again, this doesn't mean you're working in a nonprofit, but even if you're just a mission-driven person, being trauma-informed is something to celebrate.
You're absolutely right. It is something to celebrate because you're being an actual human and not a robot. Well, actually, what's funny is ChatGPT and OpenAI, or these large language models that we're chatting with, are a lot more empathetic than most humans.
They're
It's kind of
so
funny,
kind.
right?
They're so nice. And
It's
like, that's a whole nother conversation.
another conversation. Well,
Yeah.
Maria, let me ask you a follow-up question. How can leaders train their teams to recognize red flags or story risks? They've already gone through the training, right? They're already gone through, but how do they recognize those red flags or story risks as they're interviewing or going through the process?
So it's so tricky because on one hand, having a checklist is dangerous. Because then you're not thoughtful outside of that checklist. For example, your checklist might be we never show the faces of the folks that we serve when we share their pictures. But then you're looking at their pictures and you can clearly see where they're located, like where the address is of the center. Like the whole point is that we don't want to reveal really important information. So I think we can have checklists, but we need to be very careful with checklists as well. But I think we should have checklists with, did we go through due diligence with story readiness and consent? Did we do our due diligence during the interviewing or story gathering process? Do we do our due diligence during media collection? We didn't even talk about this part, right? Like the language that we're using, the B-roll we're choosing, the music we're choosing, the pictures that we're choosing. Are they trauma informed? Are they ethical? And then with the review process, did this person review it? So like I said, a health center, it was always a healthcare provider, and then someone from a cultural lens would review it, and then a leader in the organization would review it. So that's that checklist. I think that's a really good start to just make sure that you're hitting the main points of the storytelling journey, but also allowing for we just don't want to get so stuck in checking off that we're like missing big things. Again, like the address being in the picture of like a domestic violence shelter that shouldn't be revealed, even though the face is not revealed.
That's those are absolutely easy to track red flags,
They
but having
are. Right.
multiple people going over the also you getting
Exactly.
extra set of eyes. So, oh, you
Right.
missed this one. Oh, thank you for noticing, and then you're
Right.
going down the right path. Now, what about onboarding contractors that you're probably working for short
Right.
term, or freelancers, or even partners that you
Right.
might have on
Right.
board?
Right. I mean, again, that's where you can have someone like myself that can just record. This is what I do often. I'll do a 1 to 2 hour training live, virtually, but live, and it's recorded. And they use that for onboarding. So it doesn't have to be me, but I would look into a trainer. Some of you might be thinking, I'm not a storyteller, but I'm a healthcare provider. I work in a preschool. We can insert being trauma-informed into every part of our work. So if you see that, oh, we might need to get training, trauma-informed training in this area, see if part of that training can be recorded for onboarding. And then that's something that you're sharing with freelancer, just part of the contract. Just, we want you to watch this. Here's a checklist. And these are our kind of checks and balances so that no one, you know, so that we are accounting for blind spots.
That is absolutely helpful. Thank you so much. And I know so many listeners here are solopreneurs or creatives. Let's end with some advice for them. So let's zoom in for someone running a podcast, a small brand, or even a personal platform. How can they practice this approach?
I would start with developing an awareness of trauma and the serious nature, the insidious nature of trauma. I would revisit your protocols and your processes, and where can you insert more safety and agency? But last, I want you to be very cautious of your own nervous system. As a podcaster, as a marketer, as a storyteller, you are likely holding space for so many difficult stories. Vicarious trauma is real. Vicarious trauma means that you haven't experienced it firsthand, but you're still having the same nervous system, negative nervous system response, as if you had experienced it firsthand. So I have studied trauma with several different institutes and specialists and those who are experts in trauma-informed. And vicarious trauma is a huge, huge part of being trauma-informed. You have to take care of yourself as a storyteller in order to properly hold space for your story owners. So I encourage you to think of that. Think of when you might be triggered during telling a story. Think about what you do before and after a story to ground yourself.
That makes so much sense, because if you can enjoy a movie, you know, you're enjoying a movie, you're not there in the movie, but you enjoy it because of the experiences that they're sharing. So obviously it's going to affect, if you're listening to some traumatic stories, it's going to hurt you in the same way. Wow.
I mean, if your heart is pounding because of what you're watching on TV, it's also happening when your friend is telling you a difficult story, or as a podcaster, someone's telling you a difficult story.
I love this, Maria. Thank you so much. Now, are there any questions or templates you can recommend for ethical interviews? And how can someone tell stories about themselves in a way that honors their own trauma?
Sure. So if you go to mariabryan.com, that's B-R-Y-A-N.com, I do at the moment have a free trauma-informed storytelling toolkit. And so this is going to kickstart this journey for you. It's going to help you in this audit. And at the moment, because this might turn into something paid, y'all. So take advantage of this. It might turn it into kind of like a low priced offering. We're all business owners. We know how it is. But when you receive this, you'll also have access to a free foundational training on trauma-informed storytelling as well. So I try to provide as much free and accessible information as possible. The Storytelling Circle as well is a place where you're not just learning on your own, but being in community with other storytellers. So do head to mariabryan.com, get your free resources, trainings, and I would love to see you at an upcoming Storytelling Circle.
Maria, thank you so much. This has been an eye-opening conversation. I want to give you the final word. Maria, your work helps people build trust in an age of attention. If there's one core idea you want our listeners to walk away with, what would it be?
Storytellers play a foundational and pivotal role in making the world a better place. So I just want to thank you and our other storytellers out there. Stories change minds, they change hearts, they change behaviors. So your work is really important. It's world-changing. So thank you to the storytellers out there for the role that you play in the world.
Maria, thank you so much for your kind words. I appreciate that. And all the storytellers out there, absolutely appreciate that as well, because storytellers rarely get congratulated, right? They rarely see that encouragement. So thank you so much for that. And for your time here on the podcast, we really appreciated that. There's so much in the world that we can do to make it an even better place. You know, it reminds me of the song by Michael Jackson, right? Make the world a better place.
Yeah.
yes. for you and for me and for all. I can't even remember the words for it's been a minute.
You got some same points.
That's right. Well, Maria, thank you so much, and we'll catch you in the next one. Guys, if today's episode resonated with you, go deeper at mariabryan.com and check out the When Bearing Witness podcast. Remember, stories are how we connect, but connection without consent isn't ethical. Let's do better together. Until next time, this is Hacks and Hobbies, and I'm your host, Junaid Ahmed. Stay curious, stay compassionate, and always keep listening.
Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to our guest on this episode. Please send me an email at junaid@hacksandhobbies.com to tell me what you loved about our guest today. You could find links mentioned in this episode on the hacksandhobbies.com website.